Welcome to Chai with Samdosa. This is your host. I'm based in Birmingham, UK, and my podcast has been running since May 2020. So this podcast is being heart-centered conversation with my guests all around the world. I've been blessed to be had the privilege of bringing great podcaster or as well as individual who has been had a great journey in their life, and today is not exceptionally, I would say today is also an exceptionally great day to invite a great person from all the way from Hong Kong, and his name is Solomon Cutler. He is a great speaker, entrepreneur, work with the Shark Tank, and we will dive into more about his journey more in regards to how he has become who he has become right now. So let's invite our guest, Solomon Cutler. Right, welcome to Chai with Samdosa, Solomon.
Sam, thank you very much. I'm glad to be here with you. Great. How are you doing today?
I'm doing great. It's a beautiful day. The new day started. It's almost end of the month, which is September, which is like, my God, the month, or I would say the entire year has passed by very quickly.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's been raining nonstop over here in Hong Kong.
All right, okay. Great. Yeah. So tell my audience who Solomon is, even though a lot of people call you King Solomon, but let's start with Solomon Cutler. Who Solomon Cutler is and what's his purpose in this transient world?
All right, well, Sam, thanks again for having me here. My name is Solomon Cutler. I was born in Oahu, Hawaii. My father was in the service, although I never grew up with them. I just grew up with my mother and my three brothers. I was educated in the United States formally, in business, theology, and also in divinity. And grew up extremely poor, disadvantaged, and with the odds pointed against me and the statistics against me as well. But at about 11 years old, I had made up my mind that I was going to definitely design the life that actually I wanted to live, because I decided that you could learn a lot of things from being poor, but I would rather find out what it's like to grow up and also have money. So it's my goal since day one to change my life from where it was that it was and bring it to a point and position of something that I desired, something that I designed that I could be happy with and also that I could be proud of as well.
So in touch of that, you must have had great adventures, because the word challenges, or I say adversity, I don't use in my dictionary, because those words have different meanings. For me, is everything was an adventure for me. Even my 17 years of first marriage was an adventure for me, and onward my journey has become great adventures. So how do you see life? Is it the life, a lot of people say, you know, life is very hard. Life is very unsettled, and uncertainties are there. In your view, you are living in Hong Kong and is a completely different culture and everything besides to United States of America. How do you make the balance between both cultures?
Well, before I even get to the balance, and when you talk about adventure, as you say, adventure, my adventure was growing up where gang violence was prevalent, where it's infested with drive-by shootings and also with drug sales, and being able to see individuals that I grew up with as a kid actually being killed because of the commission of crimes or even being involved inside of drugs. And so those type of things, I wouldn't say it shaped me, but it helped me to understand what I did not want my life to be a part of. And so I'm a positive influence of what I came from in my environment, not something that was negative. Although those events were extremely negative, it affected me in a positive way and showed me exactly what it was that I refused to allow to be a part of my life. When it comes to balance, being in Hong Kong, of course, it's extremely different from being in the United States. It's a different culture, of course. It's almost, 98% Chinese, and there's a few expats, and of course, there's a 300,000 strong population of domestic helpers that come in from different portions of the world. I guess the balance comes from the understanding of why I'm here. The reason why I came here was because my wife's father was very ill. And then prior to that, her mother actually passed away. And so I pitched her on the idea of, hey, let's move to Hong Kong. That way she could have more support and it could help her as far as with the grieving process. And so step by step, we began to take that journey to come to Hong Kong as a place, basically setting up again and allowing her to have the infrastructure so that she might be able to pass that grieving point and be back to normal, be back to herself before she had lost her mother. And so the transition, for the most part, it's been great. Also, I have two daughters here as well. And when they came here 7 years ago, they didn't read, write, or speak Chinese as well as they do now. Now they read, write, and speak Mandarin and Cantonese, and then they do very well on their academic subjects as well. So the balance here is mostly as a support mechanism as far as my family, making sure that they're getting the type of support it is they want and also what they need.
That's amazing. That's amazing. The transition. I can completely understand and resonate this transition period of coming from a different country, different culture to a new culture, a new country. And even though that was her original country, origin from where she started, even though there are a lot of things that must have changed, and when you come back to a country which is for you must be a very new thing, and your children, even though they are geared towards the children's minds are very spongy, which they just suck everything and started to capture a lot of things. For you as a known resident coming into this country and trying to settle in, it's quite a mammoth task, I would say, because my journey started when I was in Pakistan in 1996, when I left the country and come to this country, UK. Mm-hmm. It was like a greater experience, but also a greater adventure for me. But that time, it was not an adventure in my head. It was like a firefighting. It was a challenge. It was like every day was a new day for me. I was trying to suck into the system or suck into a culture which was not my culture. And I was lucky, I would say, I was lucky prior to that, coming to UK, I was working in international firms. I was working with a lot of expats. So people were coming from Canada, America, UK, Australia, Italy. So I had this communication with those people and always had this understanding that what sort of a life is all about in the foreign country. So they always used to tell, when you go to UK, you're going to be heavy rainfalls. Every day will be a rainfall. So bear yourself or adapt to that sort of environment. And it took me time to adapt to that environment, adapt to this rain and everything. And now I'm like completely immersed. And everybody says, you know, it's raining outside. I say, it's blessings. And look, people look at me and says, you must be crazy talking about that. And I said, I spent 26 years in Pakistan where it was sunny every day. And when there is no sun, for example, it was no sun, it was monsoon, and the weather changes and it started raining. We used to play and we used to say, you know, that's also a blessing that we don't get any rain. Right? So here coming in the UK and then immersed with rain every day, there were time. And then I remember because I came in 96, which was also a transition of a lot of cultural racial and a lot of things going on at that time. And by the time 90 it started to hit about 2000, things started to shifting about, people started to understand the multicultural society integration and everything happening. It took time the British society to acknowledge influence of foreigners coming in, influence of influence other people integrating to the societies and everything. So it was a great adventure. It was a great, what I call it, learning curve for me to be part of it. And it affected a lot of people in different areas of their life. But one thing which I learned was that adapt to the change. Yeah. Just adapt to the change. If you're not going to adapt to the change, you have very greater implication going forward in your life. For you as well, because coming from a country to a country which is also not a, we call it a third world country, but is a country which has been governed by several hundred people. Prior to that, it was now being called Hong Kong, its own state, still covered by Chinese. But coming to this country, your experiences would be greater. I acknowledge.
Well, I mean, definitely without a doubt, there was and still is challenges that still are ongoing. Of course, because I don't speak the language as well as my daughters, or of course, not as well as my wife, but I have been learning Mandarin and putting more effort into it later. But of course, Mandarin is a known language for being inside of China. Inside of Hong Kong, it's Cantonese. For the first 2 years when I came here, the majority of my time was spent in China, actually learning the business culture and how it is that they do business and how I could successfully do business with them and also establish a network as well. And that was the majority of the first 2.5 years that I've been here. And that actually propelled me and put me in a place and a position where I had a lot more opportunity open up to me because of my small amount of understanding and also my willingness to be able to do business outside of my comfort zone. So it was tremendous to be able, like you said, when you go to another country. When I went in fully open, inexperienced and without expectation, but friendly and, of course, receptive to the different things that they do, their mannerism, their culture, and how they actually work that makes it successful. So that was one of the things I believe helped me and played a key part as far as in me moving along successfully while being here inside of Hong Kong. For sure.
Oh, great. I think there's one thing which just picked up from your last conversation about the way you are being brought up in terms of a violence and everything. Even though you look at there's one statement I use in terms of, can you find positive in the negative, which you did in your journey, or where you were in a completely toxic environment where were drugs and were full of violence and where was shooting going on, but you yourself look at that as an opportunity to come out from that. What was your experience? Because there are thousands and millions of people are going through with the same journey, and I'm looking at as an Asian, and then when you look at yourself as colored, people look at us in a completely different frame of mind. So what was your experience in that, and how did you see those things as a positive in terms of people look at you and look at you? And because there are a lot of community or the transition and also the norms we carry with us.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you touched on as far as being able to see, you know, individuals being stabbed or individuals being shot because they participated in gang violence, it's really not that difficult to understand or put something into place to say, that's not the way I want my life to end up. Or individuals taking risks and selling drugs. It's very easy to be able to resist that temptation, resist that immediate gratification, or that large sum of money that they would make, only because that the repercussions behind that were more severe than having that temporary success of being able to have large sums of money or buying things that people that they really couldn't afford. And so for me, it was just basically being aware of who it is that I am, and then also understanding what I believe my capabilities were. Of course, at 11 years old, I didn't know what my full capabilities are, but I believed that I could do anything as long as I'm willing to put in the work, put in the effort, and that I'm diligent in what it is that I want to do. I still believe that there's nothing or anyone that could stop me except for me. And that's been my entire mentality since I was a kid. And that's driven me to actually find success in the different levels that I had an opportunity to experience since I was a kid.
Wow, that's quite I think I would say this, when you are that age and world is your oyster, but also certain degrees also come from within yourself, because there are a lot of us who do not have that sort of capacity, because we always feel that we always need somebody to hold our hand to go forward. With this entrepreneurial journey, when you start a business, you are jumping around this network, that network, and you are trying to find your space in the market. But one thing we as a startup forget, that we all need a coach, we all need a mentor, because you know your thought process is perfectly fine, your idea is exactly great, or you are finding a gap in the market. But if you do not have the right a coach or a mentor, you are going to go to failure of your business. As we all know, the statistic of new startup can be broke down in 3 years' time.
Yeah.
They have to pick it up, and they'll say you can't sustain it. So in your experience, what do you buy into having to have a coach and a mentor in a startup?
You know what? I do to a certain degree, but what I found out is I have access to any of the greatest minds that are out there. We have the internet, and also we have books, and if we have some form of literacy and understanding of how to comprehend language, there's no reason how come I can't tap into the mind of any billionaire that's out there and understand how it was that he did things, what was the discipline that he undertook, and how was it that he made his visions or his dreams manifest into reality. So really, we all have that same access today. So it doesn't matter if we can't pay $2,500 an hour, but we can buy a book for $17 on Amazon, and we can understand how an individual started his business. What are some of the rough patches that he went through? What are the different things he did to avoid some financial pitfalls? And also how he observed other individuals, and who was it that he was finally able to recruit in order to take himself to the next level? So really, I think the failure statistics should be and can be minimalized by comparison to what our plan of action is. If we have a realistic plan of action on how it is that we're looking to accomplish something, and then we're taking the necessary steps to make sure that we have strong structure and foundation on what it is that we want to accomplish, we should have a greater chance of success than we should at failing.
That's absolutely spot on, actually. I would completely align with that one. But one thing also comes to my question, my thought process, that's one way of looking at it. A lot of things, you have to have a great books available in the market and great minds available in the market. But as a business entrepreneur, you always want to succeed. You always want to succeed. As what say, you know, you always follow the footstep of those successful people. There is no stopping. But again, you know, you always need a guide to guide you. So there is this Sufi connections over here, where a guy was drowning and there were a lot of people trying to help this guy. And everybody is saying, hold my hand, hold my hand, hold my hand. So if you can see the wording, when somebody is drowning and somebody says, hold my hand, he is already drowning in the water. Uh-huh. How can he hold the hand? So the right. Sufi was passing by and he says, take my hand. Uh-huh. Hold my hand and take my hand. So he just said, take uh-huh. my hand. So he took his hand down to our person to hold, take his hand so he can take him out from the river or from the uh-huh. from the lake. So uh-huh. we have this mindset, well, it says, we are very, very ready to just take everything available for free. Even though you are taking everything for free, but you are not utilizing it, because the mindset is it's free, I don't want to use it right now. Uh-huh. Whenever I have time, I will use it. So even though within the personal development arena, we say there is no such thing as free lunch. Right. Even though you have been given a free course, it does not matter. If you are not going to utilize it, it's not going to work for you. You exactly. spend every dime, every penny on it, it will be said that you have put something in. If somebody comes to me and says, oh, can you do pro bono? I say, well, only way I can do pro bono that I can see that you're going to put the time and effort in there.
Right.
Otherwise,
right.
I'm not going to do a pro bono session with you. And I give them a task for a week. Say, you want a pro bono session? Yeah, I will give you pro bono, but this is the task to complete in a week time. If you don't do the task, I'm not going to allow that to happen, because as you say, your time is the most precious commodity right now.
Definitely.
The most precious commodity is your time. And I've learned from this mentor of mine. He says, you know, Sam, your most precious people in your life is your family. And that time is to spend with your family. People right. who come and say, oh, I want a pro bono, I want this, I want that. If they are not worthy of that, you shouldn't spend a single second with them. Yeah.
It's true. It's definitely true. You know, you talk about the different books and the videos and different things like that. It's out there. It's available. The internet is out there. And there's tons of information out there. But it's like you said, if people have access to it, And because it's free, people don't value it. But the background that I came from is that you value everything it is that you have. And because of my background, I understood what it means to actually stretch a dollar. I understood that. I understood as far as my mental capacity, my mental understanding, and how it is that I could learn, and how it is that I could observe, how it is that they do just by going through their books, just by understanding the mentality that they must have, and that drive, that passion, and also that discipline to actually accomplish something. And I think that it depends on a person's background. It sort of predetermines the level of drive and success that they have. So if you take, for instance, a professional athlete, a lot of the guys that are in the NFL or in the NBA, they came, some of them, a majority of them, they came from pretty harsh backgrounds. And so that they had a drive and they had a passion of something that would propel them further than just the normal guy. Why? Because they wanted something more that wasn't given to them. And therefore, they was willing to work hard, and not just work hard, but outwork anyone else to accomplish their goal. So the drive, the mindset, like you said, and the skill set is completely different than individuals that grow up and they have everything given to them.
Yeah, that's quite, I have to understand one person, I have to understand where the drive comes from. And I have been working with a lot of mentees with me, and there are mentees who are very determined, who are very focused, who are very engrossed with their journey. I'm a proud father of three girls, and my older daughter is very driven, and she knows what she wants to do. She knows because she wants to be a doctor. And even though it was not in my my mind that she wants to be a doctor, but she is determined that she wants to be a doctor. And I praised her, and I said to her, listen, this is your journey. You need to, my mom never said to us that you have to be a doctor, you have to be a lawyer, you have to be an engineer. They have given ourself a freedom of achieving whatever you want to achieve, because the journey has to be yours to enjoy. If I'm going to put shackles on your legs and saying to you that, oh, you have to be an engineer, doctor, or a lawyer, then it is my things to tell you. You're always going to regret, and you're going to say, you know, I did this just for you.
That's right.
You know, I had a passion to be this, but because you told me and I respected you, I did that. And that's what is within our culture, within Asian culture. It comes together as a lot of parents put a lot of pressure on their children, saying that you need to be this, or I want you to be in Oxford University, I want you to be in Cambridge University. And the children just do those sort of things. But then what they do is they hand over those accolades, they give that degree to their parents. There you go. That's what you wanted us to achieve. That's what you achieved for you. You keep that on the wall to look at it, that your daughter or your son achieved the degree you wanted. Well, we don't want to be an engineer. We don't want to be a doctor. We just want to be a rapper. We just want to be I just want to be a property developer, or I want to be a plumber. This is what my passion is all about. So there are parents, or there are cultures where children are not given the freedom to achieve whatever they want to achieve.
Right.
And with your journey, because you have taken all the resources as a positive intake, and you understood that this is what, you know, understanding the life is going to be better, working smarter, harder, and getting to that level of understanding of what exactly fulfill your own self, yeah. And then, you know, sometimes you must have been in the situation where we give. There is no expectation of receiving. But sometimes you feel like you are being burnt out, giving away all your precious energy to others. Yeah. Not realizing that you also need a lot of energy to sustain yourself in your own skin or in your own journey and everything else.
Right.
Have you had this sort of episode where you said to yourself, you know, it's enough is enough. I should be looking at myself first before I empty my cup or I give my energy to somebody else?
Well, I guess in that situation, Sam, I'm kind of on the other side of the fence. When I grew up, for me, it's always, I hadn't always been in a position to to where I can give, or that I believe that I had something that was of value. And so since I've been an adult, even in my early adulthood, I've always enjoyed the position of being able to give back. We work with nonprofit agencies, we work with groups, my wife and I, for over 20 years. Over 20 years we did that. We visited orphanage, we did Christmas in Julys, we did home study, we did computer literacy, we wrote grants, we did a city beautification project that was grant funded by the city that we were working in at that time. Even since we've been here in Hong Kong, we went to Thailand and we visited orphanage. And since I've been here, I worked with the youth groups nonstop. And then I constantly, like you said, give away, give away, give away. I do give away, but for me, I look at it because there was times I didn't have anything to give and I wish I did. But now being on the other side of the fence and understanding that I have evolved to the place to where I have career capital, I have something that's of value that people will pay me for. But the thing with me is that I only want to be paid for what I want to be paid for. I don't want to be paid for my knowledge in certain capacities. If you're, like you said, you fit the criteria of somebody that's willing to put in the work and the effort and the due diligence, that it's not a waste of time. But as far as giving, I always do it. And then when you talk about burnout, I haven't really experienced much burnout only because I enjoy life. I fully enjoy it. And I just have so much that I'm excited for and that I'm thankful for. I mean, you look back, Sam, when I was in high school, there was times where I was sleeping in a car, and there was times where living in low budget motels and then living in missions. So from that point there to being where I am now, I mean, it's great. It's great. And then, like, you know, you talked about, you know, your daughter wanting to be a doctor. Now picture this, me. I grew up living in cars, living in missions, sleeping in low-end motels, and then my younger daughter tells me, I think I want to be a pediatrician. I never knew I had the mental capacity to raise a child that would actually want to explore that level of academic success, because I didn't come from that background. I didn't have that knowledge. I didn't have that skill set. But because she brought it to me and says, this is what I want to do, my job was to find out how can I support her and help her on her journey, because to the degree to where you were speaking, I want them to choose something that makes them happy. And if they're ultimately happy, I'm going to be able to find my way to be happy as well. So I just appreciate the fact that they have that drive, they have that intensity, and they have that diligence and that push without me saying, hey, this has to be your career. This is something that you want to do. So yeah, I haven't experienced burnout yet, Sam. But also, you know, I try my best to exercise all the time. Of course, pre-COVID-19, I try my best to eat healthy. Of course, I'm lacking in getting a proper amount of sleep on a daily basis. But no, I'm not facing burnout. Also, my kids are too young for me to be burnt out.
No, well, because there are things when people encounter. I remember we had a speaker. She came and she says she had a chronic burnout, and she was telling us about her own journey about going through with cancer. Then the husband went through the cancer, and then there were a lot of uncertainty in life. And there are a lot of things. Sometimes what happens is we take on those uncertainty ourselves on our own shoulders. Because we are not being taught to say no. We always been said in our upbringing that when an elder asks you to do something, you just say yes. You just have to say yes, I will. And that's how I've been brought up as well. That whenever I go in the mission, when I go in the community to help somebody, I always say yes, I will do it. What happened is. You are doing is with your sincerity. You are not really looking for an expectation back from anything like that. Because this is how I've been brought up. But when I see the new generation coming in, and when we are trying to delegate the task to them and say, oh, you want to do this? Oh, no, I don't want to do this. Oh, you want to do this? Oh, no, I want to do this. I want to do this. Right. Which is, they can do it. But again, you need to understand. But they don't. They only see what is better, or what they see. Oh, my friend is there. I would rather do that thing because I will be talking to him or her or something. Right. This is the culture, and I have to adapt to that sort of coming into understanding. You know how I need to work with those youngsters to guide them to that sort of understanding of what is required in to complete the mission or complete the task. and right. acknowledging them instead of giving them sort of a friendly gesture saying, no, you have to do this. You can't just say no, you just have to do it. But you just say, okay, that's fine. Come on, help us here. Help us. Then right. mold them towards the same part where they can complete the task as well.
Right.
So I think there were a lot of learning curve for me coming into this society as well. And I appreciate every step where I took and learned a lot of things and achieved a greater insight of human psychology, youth, still working with youth. There's right. one area which I would like you to dive into is towards your offering at the moment, which is your new workshop or your new Shark Tank with the guy with you working with Kevin. Is it Kevin?
Yeah, Kevin Harrington.
Yeah, please share with us your greater achievement which you are working on right now.
Well, what took place was that in my mind, over 10 years ago, I had visually saw myself working with Kevin Harrington. Now, if you understand that what's taken place over the last 7 years, I've been in Hong Kong more than 7 years. Kevin Harrington's been inside of the United States. But in my mind, I had already visually saw myself working with him. And that was a goal that I wasn't willing to let go. And the reason being is because, like you said initially, you can get so much from books, you can get so much from videotapes, you can get so much from other people. But being able to have a one-on-one with someone that's not in my arena, he's actually in another stratosphere from where it is that I work and the things that I'm capable of doing. And so I had made up my mind over 10 years ago I was going to meet him. And so I followed where it was that he was going to be through the internet. And I learned that he was going to be inside of Hong Kong as a guest speaker or keynote speaker in one of these different type of business associations. And so I bought my ticket for the strict purpose of meeting him, giving him my business card, taking a picture with him, and let him know I wanted to work with him. From that time to the time I've actually secured an agreement with him was 12 months later. And that 12 months, I was emailing, making phone calls, leaving messages, doing everything possible as far as to let him know I was interested and I was worth his time, his energy, and his effort to help me bring my product forward. After we secured an agreement, then that put my project light years ahead of where it actually would have been, just because of the credentials, the background, and experience that he carries, and also with the knowledge. What the program is, it's called the PACE program. And what it is, it's a do-it-yourself, inclusive self-awareness workshop. It's broken down into three modules: awareness, change, and evolve. And then each module has 4 days in it. And each of the 4 days has approximately 6.5 hours of training, exercises, group activities, one-on-one, experiential training, and also a majority of challenges. So it forces individuals to look at their lives in a different mannerism than what it is that they constantly always look at themselves. It's huge because it teaches individuals about the comfort zone that they live in and how they force their comfort zone onto other individuals by how it is that they interact and how they relate with them. So the first portion of the program is called awareness. The second portion is change. And the last is evolve. And it's powerful and it's impactful just because of the authenticity of the program. And it forces individuals to open up and actually experience not just other individuals, but to experience themselves in a different way and other than they've ever seen themselves before. How they interact with people, how they think people actually see them. Because we all think that people see us a certain way. But if we were to ask people to be brutally honest with us about how they see us, what's our mannerism with them? Is my ego in check with you? Am I a person of my word? Do I keep my promises? Do I say things and have no idea what I'm speaking about? And if we were actually in a position where we ask people, they would have a different picture of us than we have of ourselves. And so we teach them how to do these things, and also we show them the importance of it as well. But it's a dynamic program. Like I said, each day is approximately 6.5 hours that you're taking through this type of process. And so I'm very excited. And, you know, Kevin Harrington and his team, he's one of the original members from the Shark Tank. He's done a phenomenal job in pointing different things out to me, pointing out different blind spots, and just opening up an understanding of the market and the reception of the market, and how to tool and also retool your marketing strategies, and how to best find your niche and how to stay in your niche and in your area of expertise. So it's been great.
Amazing. So this program which you are explaining, is it available online or is it has to be face-to-face?
Yeah, it's online. But originally when I was delivering a program over 10 years ago, of course it was done in an open arena and it was done with individuals there. But part of the challenge now is being able to teach the virtual world and the virtual keynote speakers, business coaches, host leaders, and seminar hosts how to actually do the product in a virtual scenario. And so that's been a little bit of a challenge, but the easiest way for them to overcome it was that each individual has to sign up with another person. So they have someone there on camera with them, and it helps them to actually feel the challenge more and understand the reality and the significance of the exercises that they're actually going through.
Amazing.
So they have access to all the material online. I give them everything. I tell them how to run the class. I tell them how to set the temperature room, how to set the chairs up in a room, how to interact with them, when to look away from them, when to nod their heads in affirmation of what they're saying, when to walk around the room, how often to walk around the room. I tell them every specific detail. I tell them how to keep their seminars full. I tell them how to interact with them in such a way that you create an environment where it starts off as a room full of strangers, and now you actually mold it and shape them into a community that believes in each other, supports each other, and is actually moving towards a common goal. So it's great. It's a great program.
Amazing. That look like to me is like a walking, talking a business, which is like giving a complete blueprint, which allows you to just take on board and start working with it, and let it be your revenue generator instead of, you know, bringing in other expertise coming in to tell you to do this, to do that. And you are giving a complete program, which is full of all the information. It's like a franchise, I would say. Yeah. You know, you're doing a franchising. And so you want to be a franchisee of my program, come and join me and I will teach you this, and that's what the Subway, the Burger King, and the McDonald's does, all those sort of things. And they tell them exactly, this is how you're going to cook the burger. You're not going to do anything else. You're not going to be using your expertise of cooking the burger. This is the temperature. This is how everything is. That's amazing. You know, there are a lot of less people who can give you that complete blueprint from A to Z. And allow you to just follow it through. Does require a specific mindset for those people who want to take this workshop with you or a course with you?
Well, actually, the way it works is that they're not actually taking a course with me. I'm giving them access to the course. So it's basically I'm giving them a playbook and how it is that they actually run a seminar, how they host a seminar, how they get people involved. So basically, they become the facilitator and they're actually delivering the program. They would pay their fee, and then they would have access to all the material online. And basically, that is their playbook on how it is that they actually go through step by step and actually find success.
So even though they are going to go through with it, but you are still going to be holding their hands if they require any assistance in that, correct?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I'm always accessible to everyone for any product that I have ever sold. This PACE program or anything that I sold before, no one will ever be able to tell you they bought something from me and I wasn't able to get back a hold of them. Impossible.
Absolutely beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. That's why a lot of people was, because people, what happened, if you must have heard about this notion of people saying, are you a, what is called, self-book, what I call it, first, this is a phrase, are you a, because we buy a lot of books, personal development books. We can put, are you a personal developer or are you a shelf developer? Because we put a lot of books and everything on the shelf as well. And shelf look really, really, really good with all your products which you have bought and you never use it. So you become a shelf developer instead of a self developer. So that's also a phrase which we use in the personal development industry. Are you a self developer or are you a self developer? There are two terms we use.
Right.
So that's why what happened is a lot of people are very keen in buying a lot of workshops and programs. And I'm not saying that I wasn't that on that sort of arena myself. I was. I always used to intend to buy new products to say, okay, no, I started a product. I could not complete that product. I'm saying, you know, I jump onto this product. I jump onto that product. So I used to do the same thing, and I realized that this is not nice. You are just collecting. You're getting all the
density,
and then you're not utilizing it. And since then, I become a self-developer. I started, and my journey being a public speaker was a very interesting journey. And I was, when I used to stand in front of people, I used to dance. I can't say a word. And I can feel that there are my sweat were like showering down from my armpits. Like literally, they are showering down from my armpit. And I was like, my God, I got so much anxiety in me. And that's what people used to say, you know, the most, you know, people rather die.
Speaking of the people.
So touch wood, I've been in that God bless me, a blessing on me in regards to I become what I wanted to go into. And I started to diving into. Everybody says to me, Sam, if I will just ask you to just come on the platform and talk about something, you can do it now. Say, yeah, of course, man. Just call me. I don't need a topic. Just call me. I will make my topic. I will make sure that everybody start laughing about everything. And it comes with practice. It comes with all the people around you as well who push you up. And that's what happened. And that's why I just wanted to talk about this self-development and self-development area. Because when you buy things, when you invest money, your own money in something, you want to succeed in going through that. Because sometimes what happened is, a lot of people have been burnt because of people have made so many promises with the result of that program. And I was one of them as well. I spent a good, I spent a lot of good money in learning something. But the promises were that you need to go higher to achieve that result. You need to go higher. So, well, I bought the project. I need to receive those things which I'm supposed to receive. But no. You need to go higher. You go for the next level. So it's again, you are upselling a lot of things, not giving the person to stand on those 2 feet. And that's where a lot of people come into a lot of debts. You know, they buy a lot of good programs, and then they will complete the program because they pay the debts and say, how am I going to afford to return the money I borrowed? So that's another area a lot of people becoming unsettled about their purchases as well. And as you said, you know, you have been in that sort of a capacity. You tell your program that this is what it is, as you explain, and this is how this is going to benefit you. And holding hands with them and go through with all sort of a journey with them. And that is very crucial. That's very
crucial. Oh, yeah, definitely. So the whole thing is that if an individual is actually looking for the businesses that do not have a seminar and they're a business coach or they're a leadership coach or they're a host seminar or they're a keynote speaker and they do not have a seminar platform that already exists in their business, this gives them the entire playbook. This gives them the entire playbook. So they don't have to figure out what's next. What do I have to do? I give them step by step to cover every minute of the 6.5 hours that they're going to spend with their class. Only thing they have to do is follow the lesson through. As long as they follow it through and they deliver and they have that capacity to be animated, to be theatrical, to be understanding, to be caring and compassionate, and they actually want to help people, they'll get the results they want out of the program. And if they don't, I'll give them their money back. But I'll guarantee you there's nobody that's bought the program or that's utilized the program once it was in the U.S. for over 10 years, or now since we did the re-release, that says that they did not get the results or they're unhappy with how it was that they actually delivered the program, because they have full access to everything. And also they have access to me as well.
Absolutely beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. So thank you very much, Solomon, for that insight about your program, as well as about your journey being where you are right now. And in this section now, I just want to ask you some questions which will open up some emotional connection with listeners to you to bring in connection with you. So tell us about your, would you like to watch movies or are you have another set of love of food or something? What is your love for food or movies?
Well, when it comes to movies, definitely I have a love for movies because usually on Friday and Saturday, that's movie night as far as with the family. And since, of course, we got the COVID-19 going on, we do a lot of movie time, a lot of Netflix, comedy fix, and things like that. But also with the food, I'm also a very passionate cooker as well. So I love to cook. I love to prepare a variety of different type of meals, experience with different type of foods, spices, and different things. So also, I love to cook as well.
What's your favorite dish then?
Really, I don't cook. I don't get a chance to cook my favorite as much, but I have one daughter who loves the chicken Alfredo. And then the other daughter, she loves the chicken Alfredo, except for not with the white sauce, but with the marinara sauce. So when I cook the chicken Alfredo, I have to do both different sides of it.
Oh,
but
wow.
They love the Italian dishes as well.
Oh, that's beautiful. That's
lasagna, six-layer lasagna. I do that as well.
Six-layer. Wow, man.
Yes.
I need to have that recipe because I love doing lasagna as well. But I'm being blessed. My wife is like, okay, don't worry about it. I'll cook it. Don't worry about it. I'll cook it. That's okay. And there's a choice of food as well, whatever you want to eat.
Right.
So I'm being blessed with that. I love cooking. There's no doubt about that. But since I got married, my wife said, no, I'm cooking. I said, okay, thank you very much. What else you say?
Yeah.
So tell us about your hobbies. Do you have any hobbies?
Yeah, actually, I do have several hobbies. Like I said, COVID-19, it stopped a lot of them. I've been actually training, just muscular training, cardiovascular training, since I was 15 years old, probably younger. So over 40 years, I've been going to the gym on a very regular basis. This COVID thing has been the longest involuntary time that I had that I've been away from the gym. Actually, I practiced martial arts, karate, kung fu dao, probably for over in excess of 15 years. Slowed down a little bit later, only because it required more time to spend with the girls. Also, I enjoy writing. I've already wrote one book, and I'm working on my second one now. The first book had to do with postpartum depression. And the reason why I wrote that is because I had a lot of people back in the States that were impacted with that. And so I wanted to put out a book to sort of bring more attention to it and more awareness. The second book that I'm writing is called Unorthodox Parenting, because people say the style in which that I parent my daughters are unorthodox. And so what I did was I'm putting up a first series of what took place from 1 to 13 and some of the different interactions and conversations we had, and then why we were actually able to obtain a certain level of success with the kids. And so that's a book that I'm working on now, and it's probably more than 3/4 of the way already finished.
Wow, congratulations. Congratulations. Yeah. That's absolutely beautiful. So thank you very much for being my guest today on Chai with Sam Dosa. It was an amazing discussion we had, and you went through with your amazing workshop or a program which is already available online, which has step-by-step program which you have designed, and you're helping a lot of thousands and millions of people right now around the arena, around the globe, and passionate about your food and passionate about a lot of other things. It's completely packed with a lot of juices, I would say, to try and dive into. And the literally different sources as well, which will be tinkling your test buds. So thank you very much for being my guest. And I wish you all the best for your future endeavors, Solomon. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you very much, Sam. And again, I appreciate being on here and have an opportunity to speak. Most enjoyable. And hopefully you'll invite me back again.
Absolutely. There is no doubt about that. Thank you very much. This is Sam Dosa and your host, Chai with Sam Dosa. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.